There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And phone number and the text line the same. And in deference to Jeff's suggestion at the beginning of my show, fair enough. 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. 251-343-0106. Plus with the FM Talk 106.5 app, using that microphone icon on the front page, you can always leave a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the air. All right, and we continue Veterans Month, and it's good to have this man in studio. And for a lot of y'all, this will be probably the first time you've heard his voice. You hear me talk about his text a good bit here at FM Talk 106.5. But one of our veterans on this Veterans Month, reminder too, if you're just joining us this hour, didn't hear us talk about last hour or before, tomorrow, Mobile Veterans Day Parade, where they're set up, and I guess now we have found out the actual location, right by the icebox, is where we're going to have the Mobile Command Unit, and Dan and Dalton will be doing the morning show from 6 to 9, but we're going to be there, as we say, feeding and watering the veterans. We'll have coffee and water and sweet treats and healthy foods and all that good stuff, so stop by and see us. All right, tomorrow's Veterans Day, but it is Veterans Month all month long. And my friend, and good to have this man in studio. We can get you lean right into that mic. Ladies and gentlemen, the crowd goes wild for C.B. Carl. Hey, man.
Hey, good afternoon, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm real good.
Hey, I want to start off by wishing a happy 250th birthday to the, my Marine brothers.
Yeah. They don't look a day over 247 at all.
You know, if the Marines could build things as good as they break things,
they wouldn't need y'all. CBs. Right, right. That's why y'all are there. So Marine Corps goes and destroys things, and y'all are tasked with alchemy in the CBs. I mean, the stories y'all are, and maybe Carl will tell us some, but you give them like, okay, here's what you got. We need a landing for, you know, bringing things onto this island in the Pacific. Here's a toothbrush. Here's a piece of lint. And here's a popsicle stick. And
can do.
And y'all did it.
Yeah. You know, there's a... we've got a lot of mottos. There's some really cool ones. One of them is the difficult we'll do it once. The impossible will take just a little longer.
I like it. Okay, you know what? And let's do this, too, because for some of the audience, too, that younger people or people who hadn't paid attention, you talk about your Marine Corps brethren, you talk about the Navy, talking about the CBs. What, if you're in an elevator with somebody, a young person says, what do CBs do? Like, what is, like, the actual definition?
Well, we build, we fight. In World War II, they needed construction workers. Well, because the government wouldn't arm the construction workers, Admiral Morial, the guy that found the father of the CBs, he got a bunch of construction trades together, sent them to Marine combat training, taught us how to fight, and then sent them back. And so the Marines, they would do what Marines do.
Yes.
And we would follow right behind them. There was as far as I understand, there was no action in the Pacific. And I didn't find out until a friend of mine went to D-Day, went to Normandy. The CBs were at D-Day. They were setting up, they do dumb stuff like get in front of things and build things so other guys can fight around them.
So, I mean, yes, if somebody's watching an account of war and sees infrastructure,
yep,
right, infrastructure for offloading Marines or right, for making transport off a Navy ship into shore, those kind of things, that's
us. We do it, man. Matter of fact, CBs actually repaired ships at sea during World War II. I'll tell you a funny story.
Not just on land. So, yeah, y'all were tasked with doing the projects on the ships.
Right. I almost became what they call a UCT, underwater construction team guy, but I was a little I passed all the tests, but I got myself in a little trouble in a strip joint in Orlando.
No.
And they said, you know, Carl, it's best you go back to the Seabees, because I had passed all the physical tests. And it was like it's a construction version of a SEAL.
Said you got yourself in a little trouble. And I just want to just ask, too, when you went to that place, was Yankee Baby Girl dancing at that place?
No, she was not.
She was not.
I put a lot of miles between that and then before I met Baby Girl.
Okay. Let's think about it. Even in a World War II scenario, one of our naval assets takes an attack, right? Takes a missile, you don't have a chance to go pull it into the shop there.
Right. I'm not sure of the specifics, because when I was growing up, I was born in Pritchard, and when I was growing up, I spent more time on the USS Alabama than I did on any ship the whole time in the 4 years I was in the Seabees. We're not that kind of Navy.
Yeah.
We go to a Navy boot camp, learn all that Navy blue jackets manual and all that kind of stuff, and then we're back in the dirt. We're brown shoe Navy, man. You don't get a lot of polish.
Yeah, you don't have the time to polish.
Yeah.
But so coming into this, when you made your decision, first of all, tell me about enlisting. What drove you?
Well, I grew up a Seabee. My father and my uncle were both reserve Seabees. As a matter of fact,
he had no chance then, did he?
All I knew really about my father's service was that he was a utilities man and did air conditioning, refrigeration, and ended up being a service manager for Sears because of that. He used that, catapulted him on.
Right.
My grandfather was an electrician. I played around with his stuff and, learned enough to be dangerous.
Right.
But I was living over in Jefferson Parish in the New Orleans area. And I was like you, free range on the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
I was free range on the streets.
Okay.
My parents had better things to do than raise kids at that time. So one day I'm riding around with my buddies, and in 1970 Delta 88 four door, listening to Foghat. In 1979, I look like something. We were doing our best Cheech and Chong Led Zeppelin impersonations.
Yes. I can picture you.
So I pulled into this little strip mall. And where the recruiters were, and left these guys in the car, walked into the office with the Navy and Marines in the same office, because Marines don't want to admit it, but they're part of the Department of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I walk in looking like I looked, 17 years old, smelling like something out of a Cheech and Chong movie.
Right.
And they looked at me, and I said, I'm here to join the Seabees. The Marine laughed out loud and looked at the Navy guy and said, he's yours. So they gave me that.
He didn't even try to get you.
I got him involved though. They gave me that little sample test that decides whether they want to send you down to take the big test. And I was at that time. I was a pretty intelligent dumbass. I was doing really stupid things, but
you knew
my IQ was.
Yeah, yeah, I think that.
So anyway, I passed the test.
A lot of us can resemble that remark.
I almost aced the test. I mean, it was real good. So they were like,
we got a smart one.
Yeah, but I was 17, so they had to get my father to sign.
Well, that shouldn't be hard. He was in, right?
Well, my father was adamant I wasn't going to be a Marine.
Mm.
So I told them, I'm ready to go now, but I want him to ask my father, and pointed to the Marine. So they showed up at my house one night, both of them in dressed uniforms. And, looking to the nines, the Marine guy answered the door. My father was quite a scotch drinker.
Okay.
He answered the door. My father went to the door. The Marine guy's standing there, and he said, I'm here to talk to you about your son enlisting. My father slammed the door.
Hey, Navy guy, you're next up. Yeah.
Well, the door knocked again, and my father came to the door, and he didn't really cuss in front of the family much, but he used some of his good Navy language.
Right.
As he was opening the door, and the Navy guy was standing there. The way my father looked at me, I could have dropped dead, he said, where do I sign? And do you want to take him now?
So that's how you enlisted.
Yep, that was it. That's my story.
But talk about this, too. You talking about working with your grandfather's electrical and your father doing HVAC. Coming into that, were they picking people BCBs that already had that experience, or in that aptitude test, were they taking somebody out like, we can teach this?
Yeah,
like,
all the way up until I went to my A school in Gulfport, CBs, they wanted me to be nuclear electronics for some crazy reason. I'm like, no. I
wanted
to be a CB.
Okay.
And so, no, they, um, they, they give you a choice, you know, with your test. You know, they say you can qualify for this, and you know, this is back in, you know, in late 70s.
Yeah.
And they, and I told them, I said, look, I, you know, at first I wanted to be an equipment operator.
Okay.
But my father said, you're going to learn to operate a lot of equipment in the battalion. Go, you worked with your grandfather, go be an electrician. You like that.
Because even if you're an electrician, you're going to learn, you're going to learn the operation. Right.
Yeah. Matter of fact, in the CBs, when I was in, during Homeport and Gulfport, there was a thing that people call muster and make it show up to the morning muster and disappear. You can be at the bar by noon.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, as long as you do your basics. But you could also go to the quarter deck, you know, the main, you know, that's the main deck if people mm-hmm. who don't know. You go to the quarter deck and there'd be these clipboards with school lists, and all you do is put your name on the list, and then you don't have to make morning muster. You go to school. And it's free. It's just school, wow. school. I did RT. Back then they had a thing called an RT 6000 forklift, rough terrain, 6,000 right. pound capacity.
Teach you run that?
I took a school on it, and they've got a. They used to have a track out there. It was like an autocross or a motocross thing for.
But you run the forklift?
Yeah, you pick up big old stringers, and man, I'd go out there and play, and you could go to the equipment yard and get the yard master to. Sign, you let you operate something, and he'd sign your military driver's license, and you'd be, you know, next time they're passing out shovels, you're climbing up in a piece smart, of equipment.
We knew you were a smart man.
Yeah.
So you go into this, and I want to talk about one thing. We'll come back to this at the end, because as enlistment is coming back up out there, what you're describing, too, may be the right placement for somebody's child listening.
You know? Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when y'all were talking to that guy, that new construction school,
mm-hmm. Yes.
I was like, that sounds like CBA schools, and we didn't have anything like that, you know, especially over in New Orleans where I live in the New Orleans area.
Right.
There was nothing like that. You know, I mean,
right.
It wasn't the quality education. It was just not a place to raise kids at that time.
Right.
Like I send you the stuff about the concerts and stuff that I've been to.
Sure.
Yeah. So I was 16, 17 years old going to those concerts.
Well, glad you got you in with the Navy. But, I mean, somebody listening today and goes, you know what, the job, because I've said this before, we worry about what AI is going to take, jobs-wise.
Right.
But I think if you do something, yeah. not enter, but if you physically do something,
yeah,
I think those jobs are going to be around for a lot longer.
Yeah, because, you know, to get these computers to work, you need an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Right.
And I always joke about, you know, once you plug it in, I can get everything the way it's supposed to be. Don't ask me to touch that thing.
Right, but the AI will deal with the computers, but the AI is not going to be able to
run the wire, do the ground, check your amperage,
right.
your hertz, the whole nine yards. None of that can be done by AI. You need those hands. You need
right.
skillful hands. You know, that's another one of our mottos. It's in on the CB. There's a beautiful CB memorial at Arlington Cemetery, and it has a CB. You know, and you know, piss pot and, you know,
right.
bare-chested, you know.
Right.
If you look at it, you can see they use me as a model.
Oh, sure, Carl.
He's reaching down to a child. But it says, with willing hearts and skillful hands, with compassion for others we build, for peace with freedom we fight.
Very good.
Yeah.
And
you Google it. It's a beautiful memorial.
It is interesting, though, because we think about it, and people, you know, maybe that one of the younger people listening that want to enlist or parents listening, they're like, what path? Right, for my child, what path out there? And that's one that is, I mean,
the cool
a lot of people don't know about, though.
The CBs, you can, I talked to a lot of veteran friends of mine, and in the CBs, you can get that honorable discharge, walk off base, and go to work.
Yep, that's what I'm getting at. And a lot of parents are thinking about it like
it's
that.
It's transferable skills.
Yes.
And plus, you get to play with, I was an expert at M60 machine gun. I had before that, I had a 203 grenade launcher on my 16.
I mean, you get to do cool stuff.
And you get an education.
At the same time.
And you get the discipline that I needed.
Well, I think what you're talking about for a lot of people is going to make a lot of sense. My guest here, CB Carl, I want to say this, too. First of all, Supermom says, not me. I think I thought about CB Carl was in reference to a CB, because we never see it spelled out. Thank you for your service.
Well, yeah, I like to call it a contribution, because I was part of a battalion, a big team, and we got a lot of things done.
Superbomb has a child in the service as well, a son.
Yeah, I hear a lot. Yeah.
This OBT, he knows what I mean. Some of y'all say OBT, that's the acronym. You military guys, everything's an acronym. So maybe a fellow CB out there.
It's escaping me right now.
Yeah.
Of all OBT. Things I've lost over the years, my memory is what I miss the most.
Let's talk about this, too. You're talking about a lot of deployments. We're talking about the Northern Gulf Coast School. But, I mean, you were on with me at the 80th anniversary of the dropping of the bomb in Hiroshima.
Going to Tinian.
Yeah, and you're talking about being at Tinian. Some of the places you went with the CBs.
My first deployment was Diego Garcia. We were the last battalion on Diego Garcia.
Before Explain, folks, Diego Garcia.
If you stick a pin in the middle of the Indian Ocean, you're going to be real close to Diego Garcia. It's a little, looks like a footprint kind of thing. It's a big horseshoe-shaped island with a lagoon.
Atoll, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that was my first deployment. And at that time, I was like, you know, I was top of my class electrician. Right. I'd gotten to play with some weapons and do my combat training and all that. And I was just doing a few months after we got there, Reagan ordered to shoot down those Libyan jets. Things mm-hmm. got a little tense. And while I was there, Sadat, the Egyptian president, was shot. So things got a little. And when I got back from that deployment, that's when I ended up going to 60 school. Yeah. I didn't volunteer for that. My commanding officer was...
So we need somebody to shoot the 60?
Well, no. Everybody in my battalion, we were homeport and go for it. Everybody in my battalion that put in a what they call a leave chit, a request form. Mm-hmm. They call them chits. Navy's full of chits.
He did not cuss, y'all.
That's a CH.
Yes.
But he... everybody that put in for leave on Mardi Gras got sent to 60 school at Camp Shelby.
He knows. I know how to deal with these boys.
he retired as a 2-star admiral. He left our battalion to go to the Navy War College, and he had quite a career. He's still around. We were at Camp Covington in Guam.
You knew him. We're going to go on the news. You hold on to that. We're coming right back. CB Carl, the man. CBs, building, and getting to shoot M60s at the same time. We'll hear more of his story when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 125, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Veterans Day Eve. I hope to see y'all all down downtown Mobile tomorrow for the Veterans Day Parade. Kicks off at 10. We'll be down there in the hours preceding, feeding and watering veterans like my friend C.B. Carl. Come by and get fed and watered. What do you think about that?
Yeah. It's a little early for me over here.
And before we wrap up here, too, just got a couple minutes, but you were talking about different, you know, Diego Garcia, but you also talked about going to Tinian. Can you explain, like, for folks that didn't hear you that day?
Well, I was part of what they call an air detachment. It's a small group within the battalion, and it's all the different rates and all, but I got tear gassed a lot more than the other guys, and we do a lot more combat training, and we did a combat exercise in Tinian where our task is that anything breaks out and within the theater of operation of my battalion, we had to be on the ground and operational within 48 hours.
Okay.
So, and we did a combat exercise. Reagan wanted to we were the first military there since World War II.
That's what I'm saying. So Tinian, that base had been sitting there.
It had been overgrown.
Took it over kind of thing.
Yeah. And the amount of hardware we found there, there was a fight. Because you can see Saipan from there.
Okay.
It's like looking across the bay.
It's that close.
And the amount of fighting that went on there, it was, I mean, because we had to go out and find old machine guns and blown up stuff. So our equipment, when they were working on the, we had to get out of the way so it wouldn't tear up our equipment. You know,
it was still there.
Had piles. You could hide a truck behind the piles of rusted military equipment that we had drug up out of there.
How'd that feel, putting your hands on stuff that had been, like in the horrible warfare in the Pacific Theater?
It touches you. It's just like I told you about us, me being on the squad that was sent out to find the bomb pits.
And explain to folks bomb pits were.
That was where the Nola Gay and boxcar were loaded up for Hiroshima and Nagasaki, respectfully. They put the bomb in there, they armed the bomb, and then they put the airplane over it.
It was so big, you had to pull over it to load the bomb into it.
Yeah, well, you know the story about the Indianapolis that they filmed here. The reason they were out there being eaten by sharks is because nobody knew where they were because they brought the bomb over.
Okay, yes.
And so there was no coordinates and stuff for them when they got torpedoed.
I didn't know that's why they couldn't find them.
Yeah, nobody knew. Nobody was telling anybody where they were.
It was secret.
Right, yeah.
And you stood in the bomb pits where...
Well, yeah, we uncovered them, pulled the jungle out of them. And
you're looking at the place where the bombs were loaded.
Yep. And we were a bunch of young punks, you know. you know, it was like punishment to go out there and hack around in the jungle. They said, it's over there somewhere. Go find them, because they wanted to preserve them and mm-hmm. not get them messed up, you know, because of history. And, man, we were out there, you know.
You're in a jungle looking for the pits.
Beating and moaning and all. And then all of a sudden this one guy said, I got them. And we all went over there, and there was wildflowers growing out of them like you see in the old westerns, man. There was flowers growing all around them. And there was a plaque there. They had the forethought back then to put a brass plaque on it. It was just all overgrown. And, man, we all got quiet like we were at a funeral, man. It hit all of us like a train.
Bunch of young, rowdy guys unhappy with their job that day, and y'all just went silent.
Yeah, it was something. One more quick thing back up, Diego Garcia. You said about us making things happen that ain't mm-hmm. supposed to. The B-52s that are operating in the Middle East right now operate out of Diego Garcia. When my battalion and MCB-1 got there, you could not land a B-52 there. So part of my battalion went over the other side of the island, blew it up, trucked it over, and made the island bigger on that side so they could fit a B-52 runway.
You had to take island from one part and go put it at the end of the runway.
Yes, sir. That's what we did, man. I didn't work on it, but whenever they were blasting.
So even y'all fixed up, but you also build real estate? I didn't know.
Yeah, well, when they were blasting, the fish would float up. You know how that works, mm-hmm. right? So there was a lottery for us to, you know, guys that would get off their job, and go out there and pick up fish.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
CB Carl, thank you for your service to our country.
Think what you do. Man, you do it. You're a great representative for all of us veterans.
I'm just your civilian buddy. That's it. Y'all did the real work. Thank you, and happy Veterans Day.
You shine the light, man. You shine the light.
It's worth shining on. There he is, CB Carl. And tomorrow, make sure you are somewhere, whether it's Mobile or another event, you're standing there applauding these men and women that served our country on Veterans Day. All right, coming right back. News is next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
.135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday. Good time to check in with my friend Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And she's been on this, Anna's responsible. She's been on the Christmas gift track, I don't know, since early October, so nothing's changed there, Anna, but you got some other ideas for us in the mix.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had so many engravings come in today. A lot of people came in for the silver, the 1 ounce pieces that are Christmas themed. You can get bars and rounds, and they normally feature like Santa on them, but they could be other scenes like a snowman or a Christmas angel, something like that. But you can have the back personalized or engraved. So I've had a lot of those come in today. I don't know what it is about a Monday, but a lot of people are thinking about Christmas.
Yeah, and that's when everybody gets everything done. You thought about it all weekend. Now, Monday, I'm going to get the thing done. But that's a great thing, too. We talk about with the price of precious metals and the value of that gift. But on top of that, it's not just a, you know, here's just another thing. When you engrave it, it makes it special.
Oh, absolutely. You personalize it. It does make it very special. So you can even skip the card. You know, a lot of people get your mm-hmm. Christmas card, or they used to back in the day when I was younger. But you can skip that step, and you can just gift it as is. You know, you can kind of, to me, it's almost like a gift card and a gift all in one.
Now, well said. And I would say anybody out there that was debating, should I give Sean some precious metal or a Christmas card? Precious metal, please. So people need to come see you, check out the inventory, and also figure out what they're going to have engraved on stuff. How do they find you?
We're at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. We're just a block west of Little Flower Catholic School and Church.
Good stuff, Anna. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
All right, there goes Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Also, because I know it's not even Thanksgiving, but it's already, heck, it was Christmas in October. We'll get my friend Wayne Dean from UCP Mobile to explain more about that. I mean, people were complaining today, a political cycle starts so early, they're campaigning hard for 2026. Christmas campaign starts, I don't know, end of August or something like that?
At least.
You know, and y'all do Mardi Gras in July. You're always moving forward on this stuff.
Yeah, we're always ahead of the game.
Yeah, that's for sure. Talk to us, first of all, because we are going to talk about what y'all do, because I love your story. But event coming up, Christmas Nights and Lights.
Yes, we, for many years, I don't know, about 5 or 6 years, we did a run through the Christmas lights at the Hank. And, you know, most of Mobile knows the story. The city, you know, sold or anyway disposed of the Hank. So the company that had the lights could not have the lights. And therefore, we could not have the run, 5K, and fun run. He moved it to, I believe it was Jacksonville for a year, brought it back at the Speedway. Well, we could not do it at the Speedway because, you know, we have to have access for people in wheelchairs. And, of course, we like to have families come out, even with kids in strollers.
Yes.
So
you're saying the Speedway wasn't right for that?
Speedway, you got a bank track out there. I couldn't even get fast enough to work that bank track. I mean, and I don't run. But anyway, we were kind of surprised this year all of a sudden Ari calls and we're going to do it this year at the parking lot of Dolphin Way Baptist Church.
Okay.
Well, so I would thought, well, this is a flat course.
It's a big parking lot.
It's a big parking lot. It's doable. So we met with him. So after a 4-year lapse.
It's back.
It's back. And we've got good news and bad news. One bad news is that the course is shorter because it's not as big as the Hank was. Mm-hmm. But the good news is the 5K gets to run through and see the lights 3 times.
Okay.
Instead of 2.
Well, and I mean, that's if you're like, I guess people can run and pay attention to lights, people that are fit. For me, I'd be just worried about one foot for the other.
I would be that way, too. we've been told for people that, Peggy over at Little Red Hen, who's expert, she was telling me, and I had the same question, John. You know, how are you going to walk? You know, run, you got all this distraction. I mean, you know. So she said, no, a lot of people, especially in these type of runs, run because they want to look at the scenery. Even like 5Ks through cities, they pick cities to go to that has, you know, like unique buildings.
So they're doing a tour while they're running.
Right. And, you know, it takes a special person, but if they practice every day to run, they could do it. And, of course, every run is different. So we revised it. We'll have the traditional fun run.
Okay, that's more about speed.
Yeah, about a mile point, 1.1 mile exactly. So people that don't want to get involved in people running by them, go look, you know, sign up for the fun run.
Okay, and this goes on once again. It's on the 20th.
It's on the 20th. We're kind of locked into the date because it's the night before they open the lights for vehicles.
Okay. Which, by the way, I mean, I'm not telling you how to do your job, Wayne, after all these years, but a more exciting fun run would have vehicles and pedestrians at the same time.
And animals.
Yes.
Yes.
But this
we're talking about running with the bulls now, Sean.
Yes, running with the bulls and somebody in a truck as well. But so it's on the 20th. People want to get tickets or get signed up. How do they do this?
No, always the easiest way is to just go to our website, ucpmobile.org, and there'll be a link to Give Butter, which is our sign-up link. If they sign up before the 19th or through the 19th, adult registration is $40. $30. And day of race would be $40. For the youth, 2 through 12, it's $30 now, $35 for the day of the race.
We get the T-shirt?
Get the T-shirt.
Okay, very good. And before we wrap up, too, UCP Mobile, and people will hear that, and I do this with you every time you're in here because I think it's really telling. I think people don't know the breadth of what y'all do. So, I mean, United Cerebral Palsy, Mobile. Right. That is not a definition of everything.
No, it sounds like it's very limited in what we do, but we not only deal with people that have cerebral palsy, but with any other type of disability. And we do the full scope, everything from almost birth through old age, because we have early intervention where our therapists go into the house almost immediately after a child is born and work with that family to help them get adjusted to not only a new birth, but or birth with some type of disability.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, all the way through, we have preschool, we have other therapies, but we have an adult program. And some of our adults have been with us for years. And it's not just going in a building and sit around, and they actually are doing things too, planting gardens, doing different activities, going out on field trips. So it's not just a holding tank for people.
Correct. I think that's important to get out.
It's enriching. A very lively place.
It's enriching for those people. It's
Yes.
And the number of people, so once again, in the name Mobile, I mean, you and I are both Mobile guys, but y'all's footprint's bigger than Mobile.
Oh, yes. We actually serve 32 counties in South Alabama, basically all the way from Montgomery to Mobile, if you look at it on a map.
And how many people are we talking about at a given time?
We're talking about, still, we're looking at over 700 families.
Wow.
And how many people, it would depend on how many you have in the family.
Well, let's just say, let's go... it's 1,400, but at three, average family, 2,100.
Right. If you have a single mom, single dad with a child at two, but if you have three, that's a good venue. Most families now have more.
Absolutely. All right. Once again, y'all, your chance to, if you don't want to run when the vehicles are on.
Yeah. If you don't want to run, you can come run or walk through the fun run. And for the kids, Santa will be there.
Okay.
You can take pictures with Santa and, get to talk to him up close and personal.
Very good. And give him the reason why you might have been a little bit bad, he has to understand the extenuating circumstances of how that went
Santa
down.
He scores on a sliding scale.
Okay, we got a bell curve. Good, there's a chance
old bell curve.
There's a chance for me then.
Yep.
And once again, pick up tickets. You said the fastest way, just go to the website.
That's the easiest way.
All right,
good. Or they walk in the office at Dolphin West Connect.
Perfect. Wayne, good to see you.
Always good.
All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Trey at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And it's 18 plus years now. Man, Trey, you've been doing it a while and doing a great job. 18 years getting rid of junk from your home, storage unit, business in Mobile and Baldwin County. Where you got junk, they'll show up and get rid of it. And it could be things you want to just get ready before Thanksgiving. Everybody shows up there. Or maybe you bought a new property and they left you some things like swing sets and giant trampolines you don't need. Or you got those and your kids are to the point they don't need them. Or maybe you got a storage unit, right, in the storage building in the backyard you want to get emptied, or a storage unit you pay on every month. You're like, why do we keep all this junk? Because we don't want to haul it off. Well, that's why Trey and the crew are here, to help you haul it off. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and it's easy to make that appointment. They do work around your schedule. In other words, specific days, specific times. And you can make the appointment by picking up the phone. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Or like I said, the website, you set that appointment up, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Right, let me get to a couple texts here. Oh, and also I want to answer this. So I did get a second to do some Googling. Somebody had answered me earlier, or asked me earlier. Be sure I know who it was if you gave me a name here. But somebody had asked about the curve entrance to the Wallace Tunnel. And I thought it was something to do with road work. It was. Yeah, it said the curve on I-10 entering the Wallace Tunnel is a design choice to accommodate the alignment of Government Street, which intersects with the tunnel at a right angle. So that's why. So I knew that was back in my brain somewhere. Let's see here. The last one would have been, we discussed, and we probably have more time on Wednesday's show. We'll be doing sheriff and some veteran stuff on tomorrow's show. But this 50, the idea here is we're going to do a 50-year mortgage, right? This is what rolled out over the weekend. And people saying, well, there's a problem here. People can't get in homes. The prices are too much. What if we got them a 50-year mortgage? Yeah, that gets people in homes, but they're not building equity very quick. It just seems like a bad idea, a real bad idea. So Bill Pulte, President Trump's head of the FHFA, said, yeah, we're working on a plan to introduce a 50-year mortgage term to home buyers. And I just, this is one of these things when I told you on occasion, Trump does something, I go, yeah, I don't see it. John on the text line said, that's just like the 72 and 84-month car notes, can't ever pay it off. Correct. I mean, here's the thing, and I get it, housing prices, we got to do something about the supply, got to do something about cost, got to do something about financing. But I wouldn't let one of my children enter a 50-year mortgage. I'd figure out some other way. You know, you have to live in a real nice tent for a while, something. It just is, I mean, what, 10 years into that mortgage, you wouldn't have any equity. Ashley in Loosedale said it's kind of like getting an 8-year car loan, dragging out the payments so people can get what they really can't afford. True. Maybe if we have time, I'll tell you a story about one of my old neighbors. This texture says, not to mention the fact that if you're buying a 50-year mortgage, if you buy it at 20, you'll be 70 before it's paid off. So buying a home in your 30s, you wouldn't pay it off till you're 80. Yeah, there is that too. That is a tough thing. This from Michael. The biggest reason why the 50-year mortgages are even being considered is 100% the boomer generation. And I actually agree with Michael, but Michael hates everybody older than he. Well, I don't know if he hates anybody, but he dislikes old people like me that are 53. He said, the 100% the boomer generation. I will agree with him. Said they bought the assets cheap. They're inflated their value and brought in cheap illegal labor to artificially keep wages low. Just straight by the stats, boomers will be the first generation to leave their heirs in worse shape than they were. They were able to afford a home off a single income that was on an average year's salary and cost, but their children and grandchildren would have to, on average, spend 5+ years of their income to afford a starter home. The boomer generation is by far the most selfish generation in modern history. But still, with agreeing with you about holding on the house, it still doesn't say a 50-year mortgage is a good idea. Michael, would you, I know your dad, right? Would you tell any of your kids, yeah, that's a great idea? No. Let's see. Judy, this is very interesting. When I was having the conversation a little bit earlier this hour with C.B. Carl, one of our veterans here, said my dad's best friend went down on the USS Indianapolis. They both signed up to go nowhere together, but my dad was denied. Wow. You know, the reason, because it was carrying the bombs. My friend Supermom said this really good interview, felt more local, good stuff. Yes, with C.B. Carl, he's a special guy. Ultra Runner, don't we already have a 50-year mortgage? I think it's called rent. Correct. Like, I'll pull some, maybe by Wednesday, I pull some numbers, we mess with this, but I can't imagine you have a hill of beans of equity even after 10 years. I mean, it's just kind of like, you're right. I mean, it's kind of like rent. And you could say, oh, well, look, we solved the housing problem. We got the people. No, you just moved it to another problem. Yeah, this is the math we did last hour. If I get this right, I pulled this. This is scroll up here where I wrote this down. Okay, so you get a $400,000 loan. Okay, you get a $400,000 loan you get a 30-year loan, $400,000, 6.3% interest in today's market. You're paying $2,813 per month on principal and interest. I'm sure some math magician out there will correct me, but I think that's what I came up with, $2,813. If you did that same loan 50-year term, you'd drop your monthly to $2,577 a month. So $2,813 with a 30. If you do the 50, it's $2,577 a month. But if you do that, number one, like somebody pointed out, you'll be 80 before you pay it off. So how are you going to pay it off when you're retired? And obviously the interest is going to eat you alive. I mean, the interest is probably more, it's going to be more than the principal on a 50-year. Probably significantly more. But then the equity thing is my worry. So what's the thing? You get the starter home, like Michael mentioned, you get a starter home. You do some improvements on that. You sell the starter home, getting the, oh, here come the kids. We get the, you know, another kid on the way, medium-sized home. You're moving up, and you had the equity you built in the first house, but that won't be there. And also, it's gonna, if you start doing this, wouldn't it just raise the price of houses out there? If more people can qualify, then the prices would can. I mean, Bill Pulte probably, obviously, to have that job, has better finance cred, you know, an education than I do, but I'm missing something, but it's And then if more people are in the mix, the price goes up, and then more people can buy, and maybe we're back into having a squeeze on inventory like before, let alone no equity and paying as much in interest or more than you paid for the principal of it. I don't know. They rolled this out of the weekend. I've gotten just a little time to digest it, but, oh, man. Let's see. This is, somebody's doing math for me. $1.5 million. So Keith's saying $1.5 million would be your total payoff for the $400,000 loan. Golly. Monty said, I wouldn't pay for my kids that long, much less a house. I paid off my mortgage in 16 and hated that. And Michael says, no, the 50-year mortgage is a terrible idea. It's just another way we're being enslaved to the big banks. There you go. A 50-year mortgage. I hope this goes nowhere. We'll watch it. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Tomorrow, we'll see y'all downtown for the start of Mobile's Veterans Day Parade and continuing coverage throughout the day.